Thanks for listening to the Doug Gottlieb Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday, 3 to 6 Eastern, 12 to 3 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Doug Gottlieb Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Boom, what up, America? Doug Gottlieb Show, Fox Sports Radio. Hope you're having a spectacular day. The Doug Gottlieb Show comes to you live from Southern California every single day. Chris Sims will join us this hour. DJ Ushman's out of next hour. We got some SC talk. Wait to hear what Travis Kelce had to say on the Manning broadcast, Manning cast, if you will. And you got to check out the latest lines of the world of sports at Bet River Sportsbook. Bet River Sportsbook is the trusted name in online sports betting. You must be 21. You must be present in Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, or Pennsylvania to play. Gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Always interesting, right, when the lines come out. Now, I know they've been out for a while, but now that all the first, you know, the games are concluded. You got Giants against Washington football team on Thursday. And to me, that one, the WFT, right, they're starting Taylor Heinicke, who started for them in the playoffs last year. I love the Washington football team as a 3.5-point favorite. You know, still don't know when Saquon Barkley returns, but that pass rush is nasty. Now, look, the Giants have rebuilt their offensive line, and there was some good in how they played Sunday, but he still lost to the Denver Broncos. I like the Washington football team. And then, you know, you got all these lines out Sunday. Chargers a 3-point favorite over the Cowboys. Do you ever think that would happen? Saints are favored by 3.5 over the Panthers. The Bears are a 3-point favorite over the Bengals. The Browns are a 12.5-point favorite over the Texans. Texans look good this past weekend. Granted, against the Jags. Rams are 4-point dogs on the road in Indy against the Colts. The Broncos are 6-point favorites on the road against the Jaguars. The Dolphins are 3.5-point dogs at home against the Bills. The Patriots are 5.5-point favorites over the Jets in New York or in Jersey. The Niners are 3.5-point favorites over the Eagles. The Raiders play the Steelers. They're 5.5-point dogs. The Vikings take on the Cardinals. Cardinals are 4.5-point dogs. The Buccaneers host the Falcons are 12.5-point favorites. The Seahawks and Titans. Seahawks are 5.5-point favorites. And the Chiefs play the Ravens on Sunday night. That same Ravens team that just lost in overtime. They're 3.5-point dogs to the Chiefs, who, of course, dominated them last year when they played in Baltimore, granted an empty stadium. So there's a lot to get to in terms of the lines. I think of the games that was the most surprising, it's not that the Saints beat the Packers. It's that the Saints were in Jacksonville, so you didn't have the home field advantage of the Dome. The Saints had been displaced, and they took on a team that had been to two straight NFC Championship games, and they completely and thoroughly dominated them. Matt LaFleur is the head coach of the Packers. He was asked about the offseason drama and if Aaron Rodgers, all the interviews, all the discussion, if it affected them week one.
There's a national media site that, just before he got here, published a story saying that Rodgers' uncertain status might have impacted things yesterday. Do you think there's anything to that as far as a leader goes? And you know everything happened in the offseason. Do you think there's any impact at all on that, on this year's team?
You're talking about the offseason?
Yes.
No, I think this team's focused on now. And unfortunately, sometimes in this league, you get humbled. And certainly we got humbled. And like I said, it's about how we respond to that, how we come back to work, how we stay together and get ready to play against a team that I know is going to be really hungry coming in here.
Here's Carson Palmer. Of course, former star quarterback with the Bengals, with the Raiders, with the Arizona Cardinals, Heisman Trophy winner at USC, number one overall pick. He was on the Herd yesterday. He said this about how Aaron Rodgers looked on Sunday.
Aaron looked uncomfortable. He looked uncomfortable from the first quarter to the fourth quarter. He never settled his feet. He never just dropped back and ripped the ball into a seam or a nice long completion. Everything looked challenging. Everything looked different. And I just think the offseason he's gone through, the training camp he's gone through, all the questions, you know, all the stuff he's got going in his personal life, those things can burden you. Those things can weigh you down. And Aaron looked like he had, you know, cement boots on at times. Something was holding him back and holding him down.
I don't think anyone would argue otherwise. And if you want to sit there, and I'll be an ardent defender of Aaron Rodgers for the most part and tell you, like, look, if you're not happy at work, you don't feel valued. It's just like in a relationship. If you don't advocate for yourself, who are you going to advocate for? Right? But it went on way too long, and it became a foregone conclusion, and he was staying with the Packers, and there just wasn't this. You know, his body language sucked. His body language sucked. And I think it's impossible to not conclude that on some level. Does that mean it's the only reason or even the main reason? No. You know, the offensive line wasn't good. Play calling didn't seem to be good. The game planning of the Saints was fantastic. The defense wasn't very good from the Packers. Like, all of these things can, in fact, be accurate. But there's a portion of it where that offseason, that messed him up. Can't establish a rhythm, a routine. He wasn't hanging in Green Bay throwing to his teammates. He was in L.A. or he was with his fiance. And if guys want to come out and hang with him, they could. You know? And those the guys in the locker room have to want to kill for you, but also they got to know you and feel you. Like, imagine being the offensive line. That's the first live reps in a game that they've taken with Aaron Rodgers. Of course it's different. You got a new center. Of course it's going to be different. And they'll be a half step back. And the team is not done. They're not finished. They're not washed. They're not a joke. They just got their ass kicked. And it doesn't mean that all these sentiments don't linger. But this feels like a guy who's always gotten an A in chemistry. And he enrolls in a new chemistry course. He's like, I got this. And like, you know, you got to do some summer reading for this thing. Like, come on. I just got an A in chemistry. I'm good. First day of class, I'll be there. You know, but then they give you a test on your summer reading and you bomb it. That's what it feels like for Aaron Rodgers. He bombed his first test. They collectively bombed it. Is it all on him? No. Does the offensive line being new have something to do with it? Sure. Do the Saints being nasty, does that have something to do with it? Yes. The heat and the fact they weren't on the field that long, is that? Yes. But you can't tell me that there's not a morsel of truth to the idea that his offseason led to this, them being disjointed, dysfunctional. And Aaron's never been good when he's trailing and he gets a little bit demoralized by not having protection. But he was especially bad. That was the bad version of Aaron Rodgers.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
So the Manning cast had Russell Wilson, had Ray Lewis, also had Travis Kelce on it. And Cal, who I know a little bit, is phenomenal, dude. Phenomenal. And, you know, like, he's a takeover room sort of guy. 6'5", like, good-looking dude, right? He's got, like, he's kind of got that fade look. He's always got, like, a good necklace, good earrings on, like, smells good, like, just kind of gross where he just looks better than you do, right? Every time you see him. But Travis Kelce was in the Manning cast. They asked him about the game coming up this week. Now, for the record, they play the Baltimore Ravens. This is what Travis Kelce had to say.
We play the Raiders, obviously, twice a year, and then we're playing Baltimore here soon. So, I mean, I'm looking at everything. I'm trying not to, you know, get too technical with it just because we got the Chargers, I believe, this week. Actually, I don't even know. I think we might even play Baltimore next week. I'm lost. I'm lost in the season already.
So I guess, Byer, do you buy that he didn't know who they were playing, that he got confused? We're talking NFL player. Do you buy it?
Not so much. No. I don't. Because you know what you do? You go home, you go in, as you said yesterday, even the guys, if they had Monday off, they go in for treatment, they go in for training. Guess what? The team that we play is actually going to be playing tonight. Are you going to be watching that? Like that would be a, you know, topic I think would have come up.
What if I offered that I, there's two different parts to it. Either one, he's doing the Gronkowski, right? I don't even know who we play this week, right? Like, and whereas everybody who knows Gronk's like, yeah, Gronk's actually really smart. But he almost plays a role. So is he doing the Gronkowski? Or did he just get confused on live TV?
No, I think he's doing the Gronkowski.
What do you think, Jay Stu?
Doing the Gronk.
No, I do believe him, and I think it's kind of badass because it's like, we're the Chiefs, you prepare for us. It really doesn't matter who's next on our schedule.
Ramos?
I think he knows who's next on his schedule. I can't imagine a player not knowing, but yeah, I would say he knew.
I think he knew, and then he got confused.
That could be, yeah.
I really believe this. I don't. Do I think at times people will play the Gronkowski? Yes. I don't think this is one of those times. Now, look, I could be completely off by, or you could nail it that he's just playing a role here. I don't think it has anything to do with Jay Stu's. Like, we just do what we do. Like, nah, that ain't it. I don't think it's that kind of arrogance with Kansas City. I just think because he said, like, look, we play them coming up twice, and then we got Baltimore coming up. Then we got the Chargers. What week is it? I'm totally confused.
That maybe could be the case. I guarantee he knows when his bye week is. I guarantee he knows that.
That's funny. That is really funny. It's very funny. He knows when the bye week is, doesn't know he plays. Do they play the Chargers next week? I guess that's my question. Like, here, I'm looking at the Chargers schedule. The Chargers play Kansas City next week. So he just got him confused. Yeah, I'm going to buy it. I'm gonna buy it. I knew he had the Chargers coming up, and I knew he had Baltimore coming up, and I got confused between the two. I buy it, Dan. I do understand what you're saying, that I think sometimes guys just want to play like, oh, gee, I didn't even know who we're playing. I don't think that's the case in this case, especially because had I not heard the Chargers part or the Ravens part, I would be less likely to believe, but I do believe him.
I was looking at the Chiefs' schedule. Complete side note.
Yeah,
I think they have like 7 noon games on their schedule. So like 10 times they're not playing like a noon start, but 3 of them are at home, and all 3 are against AFC West opponents. So it's going to be an early morning start for that Chargers game, and you start off though if you're the Chiefs with the Browns, Ravens, and Chargers. That's a tough start to the season, and even if you are the defending AFC champions.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's that you're defending AFC champions, defending division champions, and you went to the Super Bowl. Like, you know, I mean, I would actually tell you that I think the Chargers' schedule is ridiculously difficult considering how bad they were last year, right? Like, they weren't the worst team in the division, but they weren't very good. And look at their schedule, like, the entire year, all the teams they play. Like, they play a crazy schedule. And now, hurt by the Chargers is like they play the Cowboys at home, but that they'll be lucky to have 30% of the fans against the Cowboys. Even if I do think LA is coming around a little bit on the Chargers are the third most popular LA-based NFL. Because I still consider the Raiders are still, I think, the most popular. The Rams outrated them in Sunday night, outrated Monday night. But, of course, Monday night, remember, it's on 3 different networks, and Sunday is usually a bigger number. Ramos, do you think there's more Rams fans or Raider fans in LA?
Well, I hate to say this, but I do agree with you. I think there's more Raiders fans in LA. But I do think the Rams fans are growing. And as the years go by and the kids grow up and start their parents and stuff,
yeah,
I do think Rams fans will get there. But I do agree with you that Raiders definitely have a much more fan base hold on LA. But I mean, when you're in Vegas and you're doing what you're doing, I think it might shift toward Vegas a lot more, too. So,
well, I also just think that you can do both. There'll be a lot of people who just, they watch like you can watch a game, hop on a flight and go fly to Vegas for a Sunday night or a Monday game and do it both, or, you know, drive for, like, you go out for, like, the whole thing of having an NFL team in Vegas works.
Yes.
Especially if they have afternoon and evening games where you can just go and gamble on the games all day, right? And then go over to the stadium, you know, and watch the game. And then you get up in the next morning, you go, come home.
You know, that's the amazing thing about the Raiders, truly, is that brand. Like, they could be in Bakersfield, and they wouldn't lose one single fan.
Nope. Nope. Everybody else moves, and people are weird about it. Like, there's not a single living St. Louis Cardinal fan, and there's very few St. Louis Rams fans that are like, I'm still a Rams fan. I grew up with them.
Yeah.
We couldn't get a stadium. We moved. They go. The Raiders have left Oakland twice. They left L.A., and nobody cares. They're like, oh, they're in Vegas? Cool, whatever. All right. I'm a Raider guy. Because a Raider guy is kind of you're a counterculture. You're kind of, I mean, like, once you're in, you're in. Once you commit your first felony, you're automatically a Raider.
Come on, Doug.
That's the way it works. I'm sorry. It has to be felonious assault. That is completely my fault. Right? White collar crimes, you can be a fan of anything. Felonious assault. I'm kidding. Listen, not every Raider fan is a convict. There just aren't any convicts that aren't Raider fans. That's the big part.
That's a hot take.
This is a true story. My sister used to work for the Raiders. She used to work for Amy Trash. She was second in charge of marketing. And I was one of the first shows I was ever on national radio. And I said something about, you know, these late, there was like a Sunday night game against the Chargers. I was like, man, those late start times, you know, Raider fans got to get back to jail on these weekend furloughs. The league's got to be more sensitive. Ryan Braun, such a loaded name from a loaded body back in the day. We'll get to him later on in the show. It is the Doug Gottlieb Show on Fox Sports Radio. Chris Sims joins us. You watch him on Sunday Night Football, of course, with the Rams dominated the Bears. Let's start there. I mean, everybody wants to talk about what the Bears should do on offense, but I mean, dude, there are two walk-in touchdowns from the Rams against their vaunted defense. What's going on with the Bears defense?
Yeah, well, listen, it looked like crap in the preseason. There's no other way to say it, Doug. I mean, Mitchell Trubisky came into town and tore them apart, and it was a lot of Bears defensive starters in that game. Tua played well against them. Yeah, you know, it's a good defense. It's not a great defense, and I think you got a new defensive coordinator in Sean Desai who's kind of trying to figure out, you know, himself and how he wants to attack on that side of the ball. And then, of course, hey, it's the Rams. Let's not forget that. It is Sean McVay with a new weapon at his disposal in Matthew Stafford. But, yeah, I hear you. You know, the way their offense plays, they don't have a ton of weapons on offense. You know, I think Justin Fields is one of the best weapons they got. They don't have, like, a system that I look at and just go, oh, wow, it's going to tear people up on a weekly basis. So they definitely need the defense to play better. You know, but I just don't know. Is Khalil Mack a superstar pass rusher? No, he's not. He's a real good pass rusher that's awesome in all areas of the game, but not a great pass rusher. You know, cover corners, you know, there's nobody special there on either side as well. And then when you make some coverage mistakes, especially like that Cooper Kupp one down the middle, yeah, it's going to be a rough night.
Yeah, I talked to somebody on staff of the Rams, and they said, you know, both of those touchdowns were they had drawn up waiting for explosive plays and they knew it was coming from the Bears and then he put it on the money. And then the throw to Higbee was that was an unbelievable throw. Having seen Stafford now with this team, are you more of a buyer than you were previously?
I mean, I was a pretty big buyer anyways. I've been a Stafford, you know, whatever, apologist, defender, whatever the hell you want to call it. I've seen the talent, and then, of course, I've seen the crap he's been around there in Detroit to know, like, man, if you support him, you can win a lot of games. You know, he's a Super Bowl-type quarterback. He is. You know, he definitely is. And, yeah, now with a system and a plan on a week-to-week basis, and he doesn't necessarily always have to get in a shootout to win the football game because he's going to have a defense, and he's got a coach that, you know, is not going to put – all the pressure on him on the offensive side of the ball, it's going to still be run first with the Rams. Yes, I mean, there's two things that pop to me, Doug. You know, one, yes, McVay can open up all the play-action passes and maybe do some things that, you know, listen, a lot of quarterbacks couldn't do. I don't care if it's Jared Goff or whatever. Stafford's arm is an all-time type of arm, so he's got more to play with there. But the other thing is, like, even without the run game being real special the other night, you know, usually when that happens, the Rams offense sputtered in the past. Oh, they can't run the ball. So now the bootleg's not as effective and they're not a good drop back pass team. But we saw in that game that, like, when they need to drop back and be surgical and do that, like, they're gonna be a different animal on that and that part of their offense as well. And I'm sure Stafford's gonna help McVay there too. He's been around the block a few times and he'll probably add some plays to McVay's arsenal that will make them even more dangerous. And I think that's where the Rams are exciting.
What'd you think of Monday Night Football?
Well, oh my gosh. Well, I've been sending out warning signs about the Ravens throughout the preseason. The look of – they got an aging front. Now, Patrick Queen's awesome. You know, the kid they drafted away at the end of the first round. You know, he's not starting yet, but he's got talent. But the Baltimore Ravens, to me, are in trouble. You know, I put them in the playoffs, but as the seventh seed when I ultimately had to do it on my podcast last week. But, you know, there's no great pass rusher. Calais Campbell and Brandon Williams are kind of past their prime in the middle. And you saw last night that when they want to rush four, they can't even get close to the quarterback. They have to blitz. And because of that, and now you got injuries in the secondary with no Marcus Peter and Jimmy Smith, you know, they're just not going to be able to match up as well with some of the high-powered offenses in football. So, yeah, I don't think you're going to see the same dominant defense that we've seen from the Ravens the last few years. Wink Martindale, who I think is an awesome defensive coordinator, is going to probably have to reinvent himself to save some of the guys on this roster and on the team to make their defense better. Because you saw at the end of the game, I mean, he didn't know what to do. He couldn't drop back and play zone because Derek Carr was just going to pick them apart. Gruden had a good plan. So then he just started blitzing and hoping he can make a play and force their hand that way. And, of course, it didn't work. The touchdown was an all-out blitz.
Yeah.
So that's going to put more pressure on the Ravens' offense. And, you know, again, Lamar's awesome, but without the running back, and I still got questions about Greg Roman and the passing offense there in Baltimore. Yeah, I got a lot of questions about that Ravens team. But great win for the Raiders. I don't want to take anything away from them either.
Why were the Packers so bad?
Okay, so I watched that film this morning, Doug. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, it was a butt-whooping of butt-whoopings. That's the first thing I would tell you. You know, when you can play defense the whole game and basically put two safeties back, even when it's two tight ends and two running backs in the game and you still go, they're not going to beat our front. We're off the line. We'll still dominate them without the extra guy in the box. Man, you're at a premium there. I mean, Green Bay's offensive line got the crap kicked out of them. In the run game, the pass game was the same way. You know I'm a huge Rodgers fan, but I'm capable of going, no, Rodgers played like crap. There wasn't a lot to go with. I mean, you look at some of the completions he threw. The completions, the people had guys on them like glue. So, you know, they got work to do, and the same went for the other side. You know, whenever they play a big physical power team, 49ers in the NFC Championship game, Buccaneers in the NFC Championship game, they have issues. They don't have anybody special in their front seven either. You know, Clark is good. Okay, Za'Darius Smith is good, but there's no star. There's no guy I go, oh, man, if they don't have the right game plan against that group, they're going to ruin the game for you. No, their best player on defense is Jaire Alexander. That's not even close. So there's issues there altogether. And, you know, listen, I'll say this too. I think people overrate the weapons on the Packers. I do. I'm sorry. People think Devontae Adams is the best receiver in football. No, sorry. He's not. He's not even close to the top. It's not even close. He's not in the same stratosphere as Tyreek Hill or DK Metcalf or DeAndre Hopkins or even Deebo Samuel. He's not. He's a system-type wide receiver. Whenever he plays Jalen Ramsey or Marshawn Lattimore, we don't see Devontae Adams. He can't get open. So that's the other thing people got to get over, too. He's awesome in fantasy, and I know that's how we judge the world right now. But the Packers team, like we've always been saying the last 3 years, Doug, it's a good team that everybody thinks is great because of one guy. And they got crapped on, literally, on Sunday.
Okay, what about Jameis? Is he a reformed star? Or simply like he's playing with the lead. It's you got a great play caller. The other team's exhausted, and you can just pick them apart.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a little of that, but I think I think the cool thing when I watch that side of the ball is Sean Payton really kind of eased him into the football game. He wasn't going to let Jameis screw up the game early. you know, they were intent on we're going to run the ball and be real conservative, and they obviously must have felt good about their defensive game plan to where he eased them in nicely and got them in a little rhythm, got them easy completions, and then when they got Green Bay in an area of like, man, we can't stop their run and they're overpowering us, you know, and they had to play some compromising defenses to stop the run, yeah, that lent itself to some downfield passes. I think it's going to be a great lesson for – I almost sat there and I wrote in my notes, like, is Sean Payton teaching Jameis a lesson here that, like, hey, we're good. We don't need you to reinvent the wheel or do magic tricks here to win this football game. If you can just, you know, manage the game, I'll dial up some deep shots for you, and that'll stress the defense out because you're going to have to defend more of the field with the Saints now as Jameis Winston at quarterback than Drew Brees. And that's where they're going to be dangerous. Like, look, don't sleep on the Saints. They're going to be in the thick of things here as we go on.
If quarterback was a stock, Tua's team beat Mac Jones's team, which stock would you invest in long term?
I still would go with Mac Jones. Yes, I would. You know, I thought Mac Jones outplayed Tua. You know, and Tua's got more weapons. I mean, there's not a Devontae or a Jalen Waddle on the New England Patriots. You know, the one thing that jumps out to me about Mac Jones is just, you know, he's very mature for the position. It's why I thought he was the number three quarterback behind Zach Wilson and Trevor Lawrence, and, you know, him and Wilson the most pro-ready. He sees the field very well. He's got great feel in the pocket, and he makes so many high-level throws that maybe aren't like lasers like Mahomes or Josh Allen, but I go, oh, man, perfect touch on that ball over the linebacker. Oh, here's a throw over the middle, and the guy's going to get killed, but he slows him down and stops him so the guy can protect himself. He does all those little nuanced things so well. And, you know, all in all, he played well. You know, he gave them a chance to win the game at the end, and Damian Harris fumbled. I don't know if they would have came through and won it and stopped Tua. But, yeah, I would buy stock more on Mac Jones because to this point, and then Tua's been better, don't get me wrong, but, yeah, there has to be a little bit of managing Tua on that side of the ball or for the Dolphins when it comes to the quarterback position. I don't think you're going to have to do that with Mac Jones. And listen, that interception Tua threw at the end of the game was really stupid. He's lucky he got away with that one and they still won.
Yeah, I mean lucky that New England fumbled. I mean, that's really kind of the story of the game. The Chargers get the ball with 6:43 to go in the game and hold on to it. Don't ever punt and win a game. They're now favored over the Cowboys, who have a lot of injuries and lost on Thursday night. You've seen Justin Herbert now with a new offense. What do you think of this Chargers club?
Ooh, I'll tell you the big, like, I knew Justin Herbert was a stud, right? You and I talked about it all year last year. Like, he's a star. He's as good at throwing in the pocket as anybody in football. He really is. He is in the elite class of thrower of the football. So that what I wanted to see from the Chargers, and the one thing that this really popped to me when I watched back the game, man, their offensive line, watch out for the Chargers. They can protect this year. I mean, the front four for Washington could not even get close to Justin Herbert on third downs. And that's why he was 14 for 19 on third downs a lot of the time. He got the throw from clean pockets. So that made me change my opinion of them. That was one thing I wanted to see. They do have weapons. And if the defense can stay healthy, they're talented as well. So, like, I had the Chargers as one of those teams, like, on the outside looking in, just missing the playoffs this year when I had to do it on my podcast. That was scary what I saw on as far as, like, they're a playoff-caliber team. The AFC is so talented. And I'm not shocked that they're favored over the Dallas Cowboys. I'm not. What is it? Like, how much are they favored by? One, two,
three
points? Something there?
Three.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Should be a good game. Some lot of good throws. I know we'll see that.
No question about it. Russell Wilson looked really good. I kind of thought the Colts were supposed to be special and athletic defensively, and he looked sharp. He looked ready. They looked good, didn't they?
They looked really good. I mean, ran the ball well. You know, yes, definitely a new look to their offense. You know, the Sean McVay type of offense. And, you know, like you know, we saw with Stafford, one of those the touchdown pass he threw to Tyler Lockett was the long, deep post, like the 70-yarder. That was exactly like the Cooper Kupp play that we just talked about with the Rams and Bears. It was the same coverage. It was everything that way. Wilson's so amazing at the deep ball. DK Metcalf and Lockett, one-on-one, or if you give them free access and zone off the line of scrimmage, they can just fly, and they're scary that way. So, yeah, that was a really good start by them. The Colts, like a good team, Doug, I don't know, something, there's another, they need another star on defense or another legit cover corner. There's something missing as far as just taking them to what I would just call a great defense. They're a real good defense. I don't know if I'm going to call them great. And then on the offensive side of the ball, for the Colts at least, man, the Seahawks, the one thing I love about them, they force the issue. They're fearless. It's going to be five guys at the line of scrimmage, eight guys around the line of scrimmage, and, you know, yeah, they might rush four, they might rush five, they might blitz everybody, but they got a lot of creative zone blitzes they do off of it, and they're not going to just let you sit there and run the ball at them and die a slow death and keep Russell Wilson on the sideline. And that is what I do respect about them. That was one of the other cool things to see about them.
No question about it. Chris, you were great this weekend. Can't wait to see you this upcoming weekend as well. Thanks so much for being our guest on Fox Sports Radio.
You're the man, Doug. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
All right, that's Chris Sims. You can download his podcast. Dude studies it, knows it, played it, and delivers it on Football Night in America.
Be sure to catch the live edition of the Doug Gottlieb Show weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Let's get to what the Fox said.
What does the Fox say?
Every day on the Doug Gottlieb Show, we try and bring you something said earlier on Fox Sports Radio or Fox Sports One. It's called What the Fox Said. Here's Colin Cowherd talking about the USC job.
I love college football, and you know that, and I especially love USC. College football, though, has worn me out in recent years. I talked much less about it today than I ever have. Because college football is in a perpetual cycle of thinking small, looking down. I'm not into that. I read every single college football reporter yesterday, and it was all the same names up for the USC job. Just a bunch of nice college guys. They coach in towns like Ames, Iowa, and rural Pennsylvania. Bruh, it's LA. Last time this program mattered, they had an NFL coach, Pete Carroll. College football now has a name, image, likeness, reality. It is an avalanche, and it's going a million miles downhill. And you listen to all these college coaches. They're all freaking out about NIL. Oh, my players are going to make money. NFL guys coach millionaires. That's the future of this sport. I would get on the phone to Doug Peterson, to Anthony Lynn, to Matt Nagy. NFL coaches. Doug Peterson won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. Matt Nagy got to the playoffs twice with Mitch Trubisky. Anthony Lynn won a playoff game with 109-year-old Phillip Rivers and a bad O-line. They've got a presence. They're not control freaks like all these college coaches.
I think... The idea of getting a pro coach sounds like a great idea. It's completely different. And yes, Matt Campbell coaches in Ames, Iowa, but he would be offered NFL jobs. To this point, he hasn't seen a job that he wanted to leave it for. Like, if either you can do the job or can't do the job. Me, do you have to control the boosters a little bit? Yes. But with name, image, and likeness with USC, And look, if we're just completely being honest, and we can, because that's how I do my show, USC, we used to buy guys all the time, right? Like Reggie Bush having a fake agent funnel money through his stepdad, which, by the way, Reggie, and look, Reggie's a friend, and we're all honest about this stuff. He hasn't told me, but at the time, it was, hey, his stepdad's doing something he doesn't know anything about. Now it appears obvious. He knew what it was all about. He didn't care. And whether or not it was a good rule or a bad rule, that was the rules that did violate the rules. The issue is, look, their alums want to be great. And they all own businesses, and so they can have these phony name, image, and likeness deals and buy players just like the rest of the big boys. But you got to get somebody who knows how to run all that stuff, who knows how to recruit and get the dudes. You just do. And knows how to work within a college system. knows how to work within a college system. Does that mean an NFL guy couldn't? It doesn't. Doug Peterson might be amazing. Who's on his staff? Who's going to go get him players? Because while there have been pro coaches that have worked, there have been pro coaches that have failed miserably in the college level. There have been college coaches that have failed miserably. At USC, I truly believe the right guy turns the thing around. And I don't know if they get to the level of dominance before, but there's no reason they shouldn't be able to. They own the Coliseum. They have the facilities. They have the infrastructure. You can get people into school. You got players galore. You just got to keep them home. Is it a little bit more challenging to get the offensive and defensive line play that you used to get? Absolutely, because there's not as many in California. But you make up for that with the fact that you should have the absolute best skill position guys, bar none. Bar none. Look around the country, and from Bryce Young, who was a USC commit that flipped to Alabama, to DJ Ungalele, who's from St. John Bosco, again, right down the street. Like, all these plays, there's tons of skill position dudes. The right guy. I think James Franklin's the right guy. I just do. I think James Franklin's great. And I think if he's like, would you like to get out of Happy Valley, a great place to raise a family and coach and unbelievable support, etc. But remember, you're in the same division as Ohio State and Michigan. You got to play every year. And you're not at the recruiting advantage of a USC. I like a Matt Campbell. If you can do what he's done at Iowa State, can you imagine what you could do with the resources and success in the past of USC? You know, this is, I like Colin's idea, but you got to find me Doug Peterson. Who's going to recruit for him? What's his staff like? Doesn't mean it doesn't work. I mean, heck, even Jim Harbaugh, who was a magnificent coach in college at Stanford, in college at San Diego, in the pros of San Francisco, is it really working at Michigan? He's a former quarterback and an offensive guru. They have no quarterback who could throw the football on their roster, it appears. What does the Fox say? Doug Gottlieb Show rolls on here on Fox Sports Radio.